This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning and welcome to Disrupt with Mpumi Nhlapo. Thank you for joining us today for another intriguing episode of the show. Today with me in studio, I've got Michael France. Michael, he's been in the automotive industry for 15 years and recently for the last 7 years, you've been working in the ICT industry. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Hi, Mpumi. I'm fine, man. Thanks for having me. Interesting environment to be in to kick off the morning.
Thank you.
But excited to be here. I hope we're going to have a good chat about ICT and the automotive space and manufacturing.
Absolutely. And Mike, you know, on this show, Disrupt with Mpumi, we focus on disruptive people or people that have been in various industries and how they've brought a disruptive energy into that space. We focus on immersive disruption through in-depth conversations with leaders and business owners, business influencers, and technology trends across various industries. The automotive industry, how did you start and how did you decide to get into the automotive industry 20 odd something years ago?
It was by accident, like all good things.
Yeah.
I had zero automotive industry experience. I was working for a heavy manufacturing business.
And heavy manufacturing.
Yeah, I was working in Suspension City in Springs, heading up architectural projects, and I got a call from a search consultant out of the US wanting to set up an interview with a French manufacturer in automotive space coming back to South Africa. And, of course, I was in my 20s. I said, look, I think you got the wrong mic. I can just about buy a car, let alone help you sell them.
Yeah.
Maybe you can check the number. And, it took about 4 or 5 phone calls for me to eventually say, okay, lady, who is this and what do you want from my life? And it was a French manufacturer coming back to South Africa. They'd heard about me from my dealings in the glass business. Obviously, glass is important in the automotive space.
Yes.
I met with a fantastic person who was setting up this business, and he asked me to come and help build the business. Went home, chatted to She Who Must Be Obeyed.
Yeah.
We decided, yeah, okay, let's go for it. Let's go and see if we can crack this industry. And that's how it started. So I think where preparation meets opportunity, you get lucky sometimes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so you started in, what was your first role at the time? What were you doing?
I started in what they call area sales management. So, but being a startup, I was thrown into the deep end in terms of helping set up dealer groups and getting them sorted out and appointing dealers, getting the stock levels right, trying to figure out how to do all the finance stuff. Mm. So it was really a startup in a very mature business, and I was very fortunate. It's not often that you get to be in that position and exposed to that many things in the auto sector without really cutting your teeth through all the stages.
And at a very young age at the time.
Pretty young age. Yeah, it was nerve wracking. But exciting at the same time.
Okay, and then how long did you do that for?
I did that for about 4 years, okay. and then in the automotive sector, you hope that you get good enough and you get the call for a manufacturer in South Africa, because that's really key. And I was very fortunate, got asked to join a German manufacturer in South Africa, and went across.
Okay, so you're saying that you always want to work for one of the OEMs that are manufacturing locally in country, assembling in country.
Yeah, it's a different model. It's difficult when you're an importer only.
Okay,
because you know the tax on the import vehicles is difficult. It makes it difficult for those manufacturers to sometimes be relevant at different price points in the market.
Okay,
and I think having exposure to manufacturing in my previous career to that point, I always thought it would be great to be involved in an OE supplier or manufacturer that was manufacturing vehicles in South Africa.
Okay, and what is different fundamentally?
I think the maturity in the market, the commitment to the manufacturing space means that you're able to price position product better.
Okay,
you're linked completely as part of the fabric of the country. You know, automotive manufacturing and the suppliers that feed that business and survive of that business are absolutely critical to our people and I think that you have a different view in terms of longevity. You have a different view in terms of commitment from the motherships.
Okay.
And that's important.
Yeah, yeah. And now tell me, what roles did you then fulfill at that stage in your career?
Yeah, so I was in a funny business unit. We looked at long-term financial survival and fitness of the retail space, so the dealer groups,
okay,
and the dealer businesses.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, the dealers are independent businesses. They have what they call a franchise agreement with the manufacturers.
Okay.
And you have various elements within the OEs. You've got the vehicle sales, you've got parts, you've got workshops, you've got finance. And they all have their own KPIs. They all have to be successful. The company that I worked for had a very particular view that you needed some part of the OEM business that actually looked at and made sure that the dealers were going to be there tomorrow, next year, and the year after.
Okay.
Beyond just the metrics of how many vehicles did you sell last month. It was a fun team. It was great. It was serious business. We were responsible for long-term planning. It's great when the sales guys say, we need you to sell 100 vehicles this month. But what does that actually mean for a business? How many salespeople do you need? Are they trained? Do you have the space?
Absolutely.
Have you got the financial means to stock 100 vehicles to sell?
Yeah.
And those things are important that you look at it holistically. Yeah.
Okay. And now recently you've been in the ICT industry.
Yeah.
Our sponsors on the show are T-Systems, and I know you work for T-Systems locally and internationally,
mm-hmm,
within the automotive team.
Mm-hmm.
The switch, you know, from automotive industry, manufacturing, heavy manufacturing at some stage, into things that are not so tangible, you know, in the ICT space.
Mm.
What was the decision around that, and what's that been like?
It was again an interesting decision to take. I think that ICT, I took a view of it and said, well, the IT business is really, has always been up until recently, has been a space that was a line function, able to enable business to work. And I took a view that what's going to happen in industries across the board, regardless of whether it's automotive or manufacturing, IT is going to become a pivotal part of the way we engage with customers, the way we, as an OEM, how you engage with the customer, how you deliver services and experience. And I thought that it'd be a very interesting pivot in my career path to say, let's take the little bit that I know about the automotive space and the manufacturing business, and let's see what would happen if we took what IT can bring to those businesses and explore that with customers. I think the need for digital direct contact with customers from organizations as big as multinational OEMs in the automotive space is critical, and all businesses are going to have to move that way, if not already there. This multimedia platform of which we're part of today, in at Cliff Central, is actually forcing direct brand association and brand contact, and it can be as simple as I was on Twitter last night, looking at the feedback of some journalist in the US who was complaining about having paid for a seat on an airline being shifted, and the fallout from that in terms of her approach, which self-imploded, versus the airline and how they directly responded on the platform. It's just a showcase of that digital direct brand contact. And I think that the auto and manufacturing businesses need to have that.
Yeah, but I mean, have they really... And I'm looking at myself as a consumer, but
yeah,
you know, I think IT has moved beyond like computers and servers in a back room somewhere, and it's almost part and parcel of everything we do.
Oh yeah.
So within your customer space, would you say they've really embraced technology to the extent that it's part and parcel of ownership of a vehicle, that I'm really connected to my car in that way, or is it still back office stuff?
Let me use a car analogy, right?
It's
it's the highway, right?
Yeah.
I think we're all on the highway. We're all going in generally the same direction.
Okay. You
know? Some of us have just started and we've packed the bags and we're on our way down to the coast. Others are already past Harrismith and others are approaching, you know, the North Beach in Durban. I think all of our customers are on this journey.
Okay.
The auto industry is really awesome, when it comes to, the transaction of buying a vehicle. They know literally everything they need to know about you.
Okay.
They're also tech savvy and quite mature about it, is that many of the customers know already and understand that the touch points to the brand are no longer just the dealer visit.
Yeah.
You know, if I think back to when I was younger, you know, we've come a long way from having to go to the dealer and then sort of having a conversation with the sales guy, and then, you know, we moved into the test drive phase. Now we're finding that customers are online. The average visits to a dealership in the car buying process is down to 2.2 visits, which means that the customer's not going to shop around. They're not walking the aisles.
Yeah.
They pretty much know more or less what they want. And they're going to go for a test drive. And I think that's changing. And that's a validation point for them that I've made the right online decision. I'm just going to experience the brand and understand it. And the second time is I'm going to go and fetch the car.
So the second time is actually to go fetch the car. Yeah.
So it's quite an interesting process because it puts that digital direct association into sharp focus. You know, I mean, customers are accessing information online. They're doing it via omni-channel environments. And I think it's a great leading indicator in terms of other industries that this evolution to online is here now. It's not something that should be talked about into the future. It is happening as we speak.
Yeah. Speaking about evolution, we spoke a bit earlier about how the automobile has effectively been quite a nice analogy for the different industrial revolutions we've been through, you know, from the combustion engine to now we talk about, you know, the advent of autonomous and self-driving vehicles. Can you maybe just, you know, speak to that a little bit in terms of, you know, where the industry has started and how it's evolved and where do we see it going into the future?
Yeah, sure. I think to come back to your point, so if you look at the fourth industrial revolution and we go back to version one, really the steam engine and mechanizing the horse, right? I mean, that's where it really started.
Yeah.
And we still talk today about horsepower, which is quite interesting because it harks back to that time. And then we shift forward to the industrial age and the production line. And there are many anecdotal stories about Henry Ford and starting the production line. You can have it in any color as long as it's black. And that we talked about that mass production. We built up skills as a people, as a human race, that says we can mass produce quality product quickly, and we can serve a market that way. And that spun off into that manufacturing phase of many products and many things.
But really driven largely by, I guess, developments in the automotive manufacturing space.
Absolutely, and I think that the auto industry took a very strong lead in that space, and how that manufacturing evolution happened over time.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a little anecdote to think about as well. I mean, we talk about the 9 to 5 or the 8 to 5,
yes,
you know, like our work day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why did it start that way? It started that way coming out of Europe because, when we started with factories, we could only work 8 to 5 because that's when we could see what we were doing.
Ah.
Right? I mean, just think about it, right? And let's fast forward that into our own workspace today. But we'll get to that as we go to the fourth industrial revolution.
Yeah.
And then we move forward into the mid 20th century. And then we started seeing the safety and security aspects of vehicles come to play. That's when Volvo started with the 3-point seat belt.
Yes.
And we were still as younger kids, we were on the parcel shelf at the back of the car going on weekend drives.
Yeah.
And you know, we survived, right? I mean, we didn't have 5-point child harnesses and yeah, we were lucky, right? And then we started evolving technology within the vehicles. To the point where we took ABS brakes from the aircraft carriers where it started. ABS came from the aircraft industry.
Oh, interesting.
And they developed ABS brakes to help stop planes on aircraft carriers
in
time.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't fall off. But it was adopted into the automotive industry. And that shows you how technology starts to get adopted. And now we're at the point where we're at Industry 4, right? And Industry 4 is really about how do we take the technology and the knowledge we have and how do we bring that into the automotive industry? And there are spin-off concepts and ideas that are happening. We have connected vehicles. And again, we talk about the highway. There are many brands that are well on their way and others that are starting and catching quickly. And others that are still making key decisions about how they.
So I just want to like just stick on that for a little bit. So a connected vehicle, because you know the term connected is quite broad.
Yeah.
Within the industry, when we talk about a connected vehicle, is it just having the ability to make calls from my phone, or what is it?
Yeah, there's a lot of people who talk about connected vehicles, and I always talk about
navigation or what is it?
I mean, there's a difference in my mind about whether I can connect and mimic my cell phone apps on a dashboard screen.
Okay.
You know, that's one version of it. To being digitally connected to the brand that I drive, and they know what's happening in the vehicle. They know it live. So there's a light on the dashboard. The OEM knows about it at the same time. And how do they help me as a customer? And how do they help me with services that I need as a customer?
Yes.
And that evolvement is happening quickly. So we're definitely seeing two streams. Personally, I believe that the true connected vehicle will be evolved into services and offerings on the screen or in front of the driver, and very closely linked with autonomous drive.
Okay.
And as we move forward, and just to close that topic, so I'll come back with a question for you. If we're now at a point where we're in a knowledge economy, we all agree that we've moved beyond the manufacturing production. Yes, it's all there and it's important, but we're actually in many parts of our economy, it's a knowledge base, and yet we still talk about 8 to 5. And it started when we didn't know what we were doing in the dark. Right.
Couldn't light up the factory.
We couldn't light the factory properly to actually operate the machines.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting analogy in terms of how we evolve and how, as a society, we need to look at things maybe with different lenses, right?
Yeah. And I know I read an article that BMW have already got connected cars in South Africa.
Yes, they do.
So can you talk me through that? Because I want to use that as an example just to clarify this connected car story and what it actually means now and what it's going to mean into the future.
Sure. So we're very fortunate that we partner with BMW on Connected Drive. It's a great platform. There are many other customers of ours that are making equal progress in that space, but let's use your example.
Okay.
So Connected Drive is able to deliver a connected experience to BMW owners. And it allows the brand to offer different services. This week, I read an article that showcased how Microsoft is going to work with BMW to deliver Skype for Business into the vehicle. And I think that's fantastic.
Wow.
It means that you can Skype for Business a meeting call in your vehicle without having to connect the phone. And I mean, you could do it if you had Bluetooth in your car and you had Skype for Business on your mobile phone. You could connect it up if you click the right buttons in the right sequence. But yeah. I think it's quite interesting that they're trying to do a seamless approach to it.
Okay.
That it's natively built into the vehicle. I think that's interesting.
Yes.
So that's one example of it. I think the other example is where is it going to go to? I think that's also a question that you asked, and we're working hard with OE manufacturers to say, how do we connect the vehicle and your home? So how do we provide connected home services within connected vehicles? So if you're at home and you want to know what your connected refrigerator says you need to get on the way home.
How does it
push that information to the vehicle and make that available? If you need to give one-time access to somebody at your house, how can you open the security gate from your vehicle and let them in? And I think that's quite interesting. I think that customers would appreciate that kind of connectedness, and the drive is always how do we make it seamless? How do we make it that it's not a mission to go from one piece of glass to another, but make it seamless, that it's an experience.
Mm. And then linking that now into something that's very topical, we hear about Google, Elon Musk, Uber, everybody's working on these self-driving and autonomous vehicles.
Yeah.
And it's not traditional vehicle manufacturers.
Correct.
Right? What's driven that? Because it almost felt like it came out of nowhere. As much as it's very topical now, it was like, okay, when did we decide cars need to drive themselves? You get what I'm saying?
I'm not sure I want my car to drive itself completely. I like driving a proper set car at the limit sometimes.
Yeah.
Not that I'm going to do it all the time. But I think there's, again, my feeling is that there's going to be two types of vehicles. And we already see it in the market today, right? You get vehicles that I call A to B's.
Okay.
You buy them as a solution to transport. Okay. Right, they're not sexy. You never see them at the places where you hang out in Pumi. You know, you see it in the school parking lot sometimes. But they get you from A to B, and they're reliable, and they get it done. And then you get the cars that really ignite the passion, that make you want to drive, right?
Okay.
And I think we're going to see that. We're going to get autonomous vehicles that deliver the service that you need. And if you think about it, most people who don't drive around like crazy like you and I do, but, you know, 90% of the time, that vehicle stands still.
Yeah, it's true.
Right? It's in the parking lot at work, or it's at home. What if that car could be sent while you're at work to go and fetch the kids and take them home and then come back and get you? Right? I mean, that's really a mode of transport.
It
becomes a mode of transport. And I think that, and you combine that with this new generation that's coming through that's maybe asking questions like, do I really need to own a car? If we had a society or an environment that provided reliable multimodal transport, both public and sharing, could I not just access the sharing and have the hole in the wall instead of just going out to buy the drill?
Yeah.
And then there's the other side of that same coin that says there is for sure going to be a section of the population that still wants to own a vehicle, and they want a brand that they associate with, and that technology is what they want to be passionate about.
Okay.
And I hope that we end up with both. It would be a crying shame if we couldn't have a modern day version of an AMG or a RS or an M vehicle. I think it would be crazy, right?
Yeah. Last week on the show, I had Stafford Massey, and he mentioned something around the trucking business in the US. That, you know, it's the largest employer, but it's also the industry's leading in terms of autonomous trucks. Mm. And earlier on, you also mentioned, you know, there was this vision 2030, I think you said, self-driving trucks, but that they've brought that 2030 10 years or 20 years forward, whatever Correct. The case may be. And so that kind of raises, I guess, some concerns around issues of employment, which are definitely key in the South African context. Mm-hmm. On the one end, but it also kind of shows us that this stuff is not that far out.
No, it's not that far away. It's now. You know, they've done a multi-brand test in Europe already, from the Netherlands all the way south. Multiple vehicles using shared platforms to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Autonomous driven. So when they say autonomous driven, the legislation still means you have to have a driver in the vehicle. But
yes.
That driver is reading the paper, playing the lotto, checking Facebook status, but in the cab, but not driving. And it was a real world test. It wasn't on a closed off circuit.
Okay,
they did it across nations. And for me, that's to your point, that's a very worrying sign and a very concerning sign as well for our country, because. And it's for all countries. What do we do with people that are reliant on driving as a form of primary employment?
Yes.
We have a risk in our country. I believe that we are not skilling our people to the point that they can operate an autonomous vehicle. So we need to, you know, we're not there yet. They're not selling them, but we need to be ready for these kind of things, because I still believe we should have a human being in the cab.
Okay.
Because the autonomous truck will drive more fuel efficiently, which means that to deliver will be cheaper.
Yes.
That's proven. But we still need to be able to operate this machine. And what does that look like going forward? And that automation, part of Industry 4, and this disruption to with technology, is going to put jobs, low-level jobs, across the spectrum of our society at risk. And that is a concern. And the new term that you're hearing now is this net economy, right? So as we automate and we take jobs from one area, how do we create those jobs in another area? You know, you often hear technologists talk about the jobs that our kids are going to have in 20 years' time. Half of them, more than half, haven't been created yet.
Mm.
My counter to that is, what are we doing now to make sure that the kids that are arriving in the next 20 years are actually ready for those jobs? What do we need to do? What bets do we need to place with our education system and how we talk to our kids to make them ready for that environment? I mean, that's quite a big statement,
because
we need to think about these things.
And the industry itself, I mean, is it making those bets? Are we seeing the industry shift, or are we still in for quite a long period where it'll be as it is currently today from the retail perspective in terms of vehicles?
Yeah, I mean, I think that in the retail side, I think that there's a huge shift in terms of how do we make the experience, and I believe we're part of an experience economy now.
Okay.
I think that there are many people who will associate with brands, consume services and products from brands based on the experience that they have, whether that be how I experience buying an airline ticket and being serviced from an airline perspective,
yes.
How I go into a retail space, whether it be online or bricks and mortar, and engage with that brand, or whether I'm buying a vehicle. Or getting a vehicle serviced. So I think that the skills and training in the current environment as we walk on that journey are being put in place, and it's part of the approach that the our customers will take and the industry will take into that environment. And the training needs to be there and the change management to make it happen. But I really believe that it will creep up on us. I don't think we're going to get a big bang where suddenly we wake up on Monday in 2 weeks' time and go, okay, we suddenly have driverless trucks on the N3 between Durban and Cape Town or Durban and Joburg. I think that it will creep up on us more and more, and that change is going to drive a lot of concern after it arrives, I think.
But the signs are there, right?
I mean, signs are there.
One of the large OEMs recently announced that they were leaving the country.
Yes.
You know, I kind of, you know, was following the story. Mm. And there's a large pocket of people that were saying it's wrong, they're not confident in the economy, things are going down. And I had a slightly different view on that, you know, to say perhaps they're shifting strategy because maybe they're seeing that outright ownership is not the future, you know, and that, you know, consumption, your transport, movement, mobility is actually what people are looking for. And in effect, then you don't necessarily need to be in country to retail the vehicles. You can take, I mean, I don't know. It's just, I got thinking to say, it might not be a bad thing not to be, you know, sitting with a lot of infrastructure, buildings, you know, dealerships and all of the overheads that come with that. What's your take on that?
I got a slightly different view. I think the brand that has made the announcement, has made a number of announcements around different markets that they're extricating themselves from, and also selling off European-based brands because they're American-based.
Yeah,
American-based brands and their involvement in the European market. My view is quite simple. Well, it's not simple, but it has a view that this brand has a number of other issues. They got other fish that they need to fry, and they need a war chest in their home markets to get themselves ready because they're not ready.
Okay.
And rightly or wrongly, they've decided that in certain markets, and a lot of it is developing markets, not only in South Africa, but other key markets around the world, and the European market, which is traditionally a very strong order buying business.
Okay.
They've made decisions that they're going to remove themselves from these markets and build a war chest in terms of how do they ready their product and their offerings around things like autonomous drive, electric vehicles. But I don't think they're in a position right now to be able to do both, to expand into new territories and do this stuff, right?
Okay.
So they picked the battle. They got to pick their battle, right? In the South African context, just to bring it down to our market, in South Africa, that brand was, I believe, not gearing itself for big export contracts. And you need to be part of a global business when you're in the auto business. You can't make 30,000 to 40,000 vehicles. You need to be at the close to 100,000.
Okay.
Because that gives you economies of scale and gives you export contracts, which is really what you want. And I think that there will be some right sizing in that business in South Africa, but I think that the Japanese contract that they've got for pickups and buckies is going to be great for them.
Okay.
Going forward, it will be not easy, but I think it's a good call for South Africa actually, and what we need to do is support that business, and we need to put in place the right mechanisms from government down to Joe Public in the street. And say this is something that we can support and give them the right message in the market.
Okay, you mentioned earlier 2016 was the first year there was a decrease in the number of new driver's license worldwide.
Yes, applications. New driver's license applications. First time worldwide. We hit the pinnacle and on our way down.
Okay,
interesting, huh?
Yeah, what is that telling us?
I have no idea.
You don't have any. But you know, so in effect, we're saying the number of people applying for driver's licenses for the first time is decreasing.
Yes.
Okay. That would possibly be a worrying statistic for a vehicle manufacturer, potentially, because it says that their market is not growing, or their target audience is not growing.
Well,
potentially.
The guys, well, people who want to drive cars.
Yes, in the traditional business.
People
right?
who want to use cars, maybe not so much, right?
Yeah,
so it's quite interesting. It's an interesting stat, right? I mean, I think that if you think about it, it's a very complex thing to unpack, because does that mean that people don't want to buy cars or use cars? Or does that mean that people are saying, well, or this next generation, because typically it's younger guys and girls coming through, right?
Yes.
Who do the walk of danger and go for that test and try and parallel park, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but if you think about it, I've got a kid who's 10, right? I mean, if in the next 8 years the market moves the way we think it's moving, and autonomous vehicles become a reality, will a 10 or 12 year old today really ever need to drive a car? Or does he just need access to it?
Mm. Also, they could own a car earlier, because you're not driving it. It's driving itself. So
well, this is
you
yeah,
can
exactly.
own it from the age of 10. It'll just get you to where you need to go.
I mean, it'll just get you where you need to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But I mean, I think it's a space to observe. I mean, it could just be that there was
yeah. So I mean, if you're in the vehicle learner business or driver training business, maybe you should relook at what you're teaching.
Teach machines to drive themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to just shift a little bit and talk more broadly around the value chain that supports the automotive industry. So, I mean, by and large, we understand it to be the different brands, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, depending, you know, Japanese brands or whatever. But there's also a whole ecosystem that supports it. So the parts manufacturers, the parts suppliers, the maintenance companies, the mechanics and all of that, which is quite a substantial ecosystem. And I know there's a lot happening in that space. I heard earlier that in India, they're piloting 3D printing parts in rural areas that they'll then export all over the world. There's huge opportunities in that space and a lot of disruption happening there as well.
Yep.
What are you seeing around that?
I think when we look at the market, we always talk about three areas of the auto industry.
Okay.
There's the dealer side, right? There's the OEM that assembles the vehicle. Then there's the supplier business. And they're world class multinational companies. We should be very proud in South Africa of our supplier base. We do great work, not only for local supply but also for export.
Okay, so from South Africa exporting to other parts
absolutely.
Of the world.
With the OE suppliers. Things like catalytic converters. It's great. It's really amazing what we do there. What I think we should be looking at is, to your point around 3D printing, is like we have used as a continent, we've used the advent of mobile network operators to almost jump a step in the sequence of connectivity. How can we use digital disruption to encourage that localization of supply in the South African automotive business? I was at the NARCAM conference in April in Durban. We were there with some of our partners. It was a fantastic event. One of the clear messages I got was that as an industry with government and the stakeholders, the South African automotive business is very serious about increasing the level of local content from a supplier perspective to the OE brands that are assembling vehicles and distributing vehicles in South Africa.
Okay.
And to your point, how do we encourage and really work together as a collective to say, can we use things like 3D printing to jump that sequence step that says if you've been manufacturing vehicle lighting or vehicle wiring for the last 20 years for a vehicle manufacturer in Western Europe. What's to say we can't use technology to set up supplier businesses in South Africa that actually use new technology to catch the experience curve and supply to those customers in the channel from a South African context?
Yeah.
And there are solutions like that out there that can help us. But we need to be deliberate about it, right?
Yes.
We can't do this by accident.
Yeah. And And my sense is that it's not necessarily going to come from the traditional players. I mean, with all the great work they do, we've seen that in many cases, this disruptive force has come from outside of the traditional
players. Yeah, it's left field, right? It's don't see it coming. Yeah.
And I guess, I mean, you come from the industry. You work very closely with the industry. The conversations that are happening, are they really in this space, or are they still trying to kind of manage what they have and keep that, you know, sustainable?
I think it's both, right? I mean, they've got to keep their business going. But they've also got to acknowledge that we need to do different things in different ways. Otherwise, we're not going to meet the future demands. And I'll give you a classic example of disruption from left field, right? If you get a minute, go find a YouTube search engine and look up Airbus drone vehicle.
Okay.
And see what you find. There's a product that Airbus did with an Italian design house called Ital Design. They showcased it last year. It's a vehicle that's electric, and the pod of the vehicle can connect to a drone to transport people, which also connects together on a train.
Wow.
And this is coming from the airline manufacturer.
Yeah.
And a vehicle designer called Ital Design. I think it's fantastic, right? Yeah. We're not going to see it coming. It's going to come from different parts and it's going to come from different component manufacturers and it will be an evolution, but it's quickly gaining pace. Mm. And it's to quote a friend and colleague of mine, the future will belong to those who hear it coming. David Bowie said that.
Yeah.
So it is going to come.
It is going to come. And, you know, just on that Airbus example, I know in Dubai, there's a video as well on social media of that kind of flying vehicle, that cab that you kind of jump into, this little futuristic looking pod, and you type in your destination, and I guess you pay via an app, and then it can fly. We're going to see flying vehicles?
I think in our lifetime we will.
Okay.
I think we will. Personal transport.
Yes.
I think it will be usage based. It won't be the primary solution for all of our people.
Okay.
But I think it will come to realize itself. And I don't think the use cases are clearly defined. I think that we will find the market for that in certain pockets. And if you look at mega cities around the world, you're already seeing the uber wealthy using helicopters to get above the traffic.
Okay.
That personal multimodal transport will become a reality. What it looks like, if I knew, I wouldn't be. I'd be investing. But it's gonna be a fantastic display of how disruption from various industries are gonna merge. And it will come. It's proven that the technology is there to do it. Things like autonomous drive, the vehicles can do it. All we need to understand is the legislative environment.
Yes.
The insurance business needs to understand it.
Yes.
And then we're ready. And the connectivity. You know, we need things like 5G in this country.
Mm.
And we need all the stakeholders from government, all the way through to the vehicle manufacturers, working collectively together to get things like 5G a reality so that we can have autonomous drive. But we need to be looking at it, and we need to be serious about how we create those environments to allow people and organizations to test and develop out these technologies.
Yeah. My concern amongst all of that, it almost feels like it's a wait and see for us. Do you get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. From a country perspective, and maybe even into the continent. It's almost like, well, let's wait and see what Google comes up with, if you get what I'm saying. And listening to you, I mean, we manufacture and assemble vehicles here. We manufacture and assemble vehicle parts and components. We've got some of the best banking systems in the world, you know, insurance. We've got some of the largest global insurance organizations. So if I look at the pieces that we have from an ecosystem point of view, it's quite developed.
Yes.
But somehow we're still waiting to see how this all plays out.
Mm.
Can't we, I mean, like lean into the disruption and become that force ourselves? Isn't there an opportunity for that?
Well, if I ask you, I'll answer it with a question.
Yeah.
Right? Where is the who's got the answer for what it's going to look like in the next 10 years? The answer is no one. So then it begs the question, why does it need to come from Silicon Valley in the US?
Yeah.
Why does it need to come from a Western European design house?
Yeah.
We need to, I think what those regions do very well is they create the environment that allows entrepreneurship to flourish and the digital disruption. And if we don't give our people that space to do it, it will not come from here. Mm. And I'll cite you an example of a great project, which I think showcases how we can take what's already been started and find our own solutions for it. There's a program in Rwanda called Zipline, which delivers vital medical requirements to outlying rural environments.
I think they blood, do blood and etc. Medicine. Yep.
And I think it's a great example of using drone technology to answer a need for our people.
Yeah.
And I think we shouldn't be fixated by what San Francisco or Western Europe or China is doing. We need to look at what problems do we have here and how can we use technology to solve those problems.
Yeah.
Because if we lead into those things, we will find our own solutions.
Mm.
And therein is the innovation. And when you get those kind of when you see multinationals like DHL and UPS coming to Rwanda to see how this thing is evolving and how can they support it,
yes,
it gives you the answer, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Right? So I think we need to create the environment, the real environment that allows innovation to flourish, and we need to give that space to the right people and say, let's answer the needs that we have. And from there, our piece and our part of that innovation journey will come forward.
Mm.
It's not about who does it first. It's about what is our contributing part
absolutely.
To it.
Absolutely.
And we need to play that part as a nation.
I really like that statement because it's not to say, well, because someone else has created something, that is the alpha and omega, it's done. You know, there's always an opportunity. You don't have to be on the bleeding edge of innovation.
Correct.
You know, you can be on the third cart on the train, but you're on it.
Exactly.
Right? And you can then, like you mentioned earlier, even get to a point where you leapfrog because correct. Then you're not burdened with some of the legacy that they might have had to deal with in developing what they developed. It brings, I mean, I'm thinking now as you're speaking about the project, remember there was a project, I think it was supported by the IDC as well at the time. We were developing an electric car here in South Africa.
Yeah, the Juul.
The Juul, yes.
Yeah, the Juul.
Whatever happened to that?
I don't know the details. I don't think they're doing it anymore.
Yeah, and I know it was discontinued, but there was a lot of work, a lot of investment
We burnt a lot of fuel, excuse the pun,
yeah.
Doing that project. And it's a pity it didn't get further legs.
Mm.
I think that we've shown our competence, right? I mean, I think that we bat above our weight. We box above our weight division when it comes to innovation.
Yes.
Worldwide. And I think we need to, but I don't think we pull it together in the correct way. And sometimes I think it's and not just speaking about specific industries, I think that we need to learn quickly that we need to collaborate more. We need to partner in the right way and socialize globally the right way to do it.
Yes.
Is maybe the right way to do it and be our part in the journey. I think that a great example I read last night is the SKA project with the satellites.
Okay.
They're partnering with the CERN Hydro Collider guys in terms of how do we share data because it's huge amounts of data. And that was they made the collaboration announcement yesterday, which I think is great.
Yes.
I think that means we're working in world-class environments globally and we're giving our part to that story and we're sharing information.
Yeah.
My question or my thinking around it is if you have the start around a Juul project as a product and we get to the point where it's driving, it's there.
Yes.
It's product realized.
Yes.
I think we burnt too much, and I don't know the intricacies of the project, but I think we spent so much energy prototyping that we could have done it maybe a little bit smarter with the use of technology and just done it almost virtually to prove it.
Mm, and maybe the timing as well.
And
what
the timing,
was available
sometimes
at the
you
time.
Get to the party too early, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you learn over time as you get that sometimes you need to time it. And we're not alone in that. I mean, there are plenty of examples of partners or people in the ecosystem who have tried to bring things forward. We've been talking about Apple and Google for a while now.
Yes.
No one's really seen it, right?
Yes.
No one's actually seen this thing come forward.
Yeah.
I have no doubt that it's there, sitting somewhere. I have visions of the Batmobile, you know, where Batman goes down and he says, what's that, you know?
Yeah.
I think that somewhere along the line it's going to come out. But I think that that the Jewel Project is a great example of what actually is possible in South Africa.
Yes.
But we need to find better ways to realize it. And how do we bring the multinational supplier base that we have in South Africa into that picture stronger?
Okay.
And get real commitments around things like that and bring it forward.
Yeah.
I think we're missing a piece of it. In terms of sometimes we can focus so much on the engineering, the product, we forget to market it.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, and actually get it out there. And how do we take it to the next level?
Yeah. Yeah.
From R&D to enterprising it and making it a real thing.
Yeah. Okay. And so now just another shift in the discussion. Mm. You know, we can't talk about transport and vehicles and movement without bringing Uber and similar type of sharing services into the conversation, because certainly they've had an impact on the industry.
Oh yeah.
And you know, in terms of what you're hearing from the manufacturers, has it increased like the sales of vehicles with all the Uber drivers proliferating? What is the impact? What are they seeing that the sharing economy from a let me call it a cab or taxi industry perspective, what are they seeing that means for their industry?
I haven't heard too much around, you know, it's wild, the registration of vehicles.
Okay. Because it looks like there's a, you know, these days if you drive a Honda or a Corolla, then it's like, why are you driving an Uber? You know, that's kind of how it goes, right?
Yeah, it's
so
true.
You're saying they haven't seen any?
I haven't really seen it. I'm sure the OEs have got the stats in terms of what they're doing. I think that, again, it comes down to providing choice, right?
Mm.
I think that that Uber's a technology company that's disrupted the taxi business, right?
Okay.
That's my view on it. I don't subscribe to that they're the biggest taxi business without owning taxis.
Mm.
I think they're a great IT company that's disrupted the taxi business, and there's a lot of ironing out of that situation needs to happen within a specific South African context, and it's happening in many cities around the world.
The legislative challenges around the
response from the traditional meter taxi guys? I think that what it is interesting for me is I look at it and go, it's people having members of the public having access to choices. They've got another choice in terms of how they transport themselves.
Okay.
And their family and their colleagues. And as those choices evolve and mature, so we get closer to that pivot point in the market that says, do I really need to own a car?
Mm.
And I know one or two people who have already said, I mean, they live in Cape Town, and, you know, yeah, it's all great, right? It's, do I really need to own a car anymore? I've got an Uber app. I can access transport. I've got, you know, things like MyCity or Rea Vaya. I've got Gautrain. In my 9-to-5 day-to-day, do I really still need to own a car for those 21 days that I go on vacation?
Yeah.
And are there other solutions out there? And I think that's quite an interesting thing,
right?
I mean, if I said to you the average car ownership is, let's say, between 3,000 and 7,000 a month, if I said to you, utilize it for what you need, take a portion of that for your transport requirements, but what would you do with an extra 3,000 rand in your pocket every month?
It changes everything.
It could change your budget at home.
Yeah.
So access to transport and options around access to transport become critical in terms of disrupting the vehicle ownership cycle.
Mm. But there's still kind of a prestige, the sense of achievement to buying your first car.
Oh, yeah. The badge in the parking lot defines who you are, right?
But I think we'll see that shifting, right?
I don't know how much of a shift. I think it'll be stratified, right? There'll be strata in terms of what value people attach to what's in the parking lot at the townhouse when you're having the braai watching the football.
Mm.
I think that it will change. Very similar to how people consume media, radio, television, or on the screen.
Yes.
In terms of what we're doing, I think that's already starting in different areas of the market. I think it'll happen in how we move ourselves around.
Okay. You see, and so you're thinking that people still want to say, I've got the beast parked in the parking lot of the vehicle.
I think some guys might. I think other people will it still be important in 20 years' time? Mm. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer.
Now, before we wrap up, Mike.
Sure.
Employment. We touched on it earlier, and it is a critical conversation to have around any industry that's being disrupted, especially such a large, you know, employer. Mm. You know, I gave indications around the US, and I think even in South Africa, trucking business, taxi business, just transport business is still quite substantial. Mm. And I'm asking this question now, you know, kind of as part of closing our conversation, but how do you see that we can have a vision around the automotive industry, which is now becoming even more linked to transportation or movement, if I can call it that, and making sure that we still grow economy, we still keep people employed?
Yeah, it's something on a personal level I haven't landed the answer, but the new terms they call it, they talk about a net economy, right? They
say, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, as you digitally disrupt, you will lose jobs in automation in one area of the economy, but because you're automating and you're evolving on a technological level, you will create jobs in other areas of the economy. And the net discussion is, if I lose 10 here, I should grow 10 in another area.
Okay.
From a country perspective, we need to take cognizance of that discussion, because we need to ready our people to take advantage of that, of the 10 new positions. If we don't, we're going to be in a net negative. Okay. We're going to lose the 10.
But where are those opportunities? I mean, if I'm sitting there and I'm a business owner, I'm a manufacturer, I'm a part supplier, I'm an OEM, I'm a franchise owner. Hmm. Where are some of the areas to look?
I think you need to look at how you serve the client, and really critically look at it. And there's a part of your business that's going to run like it does today. You deliver and sell cars and you service them. The other part of it is, what if I, as a dealer, put out a car sharing scheme?
Okay.
And how do I service that market? Okay. And we need to ask ourselves these questions as we go forward.
So it's about thinking completely differently.
Get out of the box. Yeah.
And if you were to give us your definition then on the back of that of disruption, how would you define disruption and frame it for us?
I think I'll come back to technology is going to help you do what you do today better, cheaper, and faster. It's going to give you the opportunities to create new ways of doing business, and you need to be open to that. And I think that's how I'd like to frame it as a statement. Yeah.
And your vision for, I mean, you're South African, you're African. What's your vision for, in the midst of all of this change and disruption, what's your vision for the country?
I'd like us to get to a point where we're the leader in terms of the sub-Saharan market, in terms of how we link our cities, our environment, our vehicles, and all of the ecosystems that feed into it. And we become the blueprint for sub-Saharan Africa, and because the cities, the environment, the structure, and the vehicles, and the stakeholders will all become connected. And I think we have a one chance to get that right and become the leaders in terms of that space and be the blueprint and how we take that northwards. And I think we should set out our stall as a nation now around that and really get everybody around the table and working towards that.
Particularly amongst the emerging markets, because the specific challenges there we can attest to, and we can come up with solutions to that.
Exactly. And we have a great base to work off. We've got great infrastructure in this country. We need to use it as our competitive advantage and set out our stall correctly as a nation.
Thank you very much, Michael Frantz, the head of automotive sales for T-Systems South Africa and for T-Systems International. It's been wonderful. I mean, I love cars, so talking about anything to do with vehicles and cars is always a great conversation. It's always interesting for me that in all these conversations we have, and I bring it back, it all comes back, you said it, to understanding your customers, mm-hmm. understanding the particular challenges in the environment that you work in, and that the opportunities are there, but they're not necessarily in the traditional spaces that we would look. So it's not going to come from your dealer network specifically, necessarily, if you're in the automotive space. It might come from other industries that are ancillary. So thank you so much for sharing on the knowledge. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you to our sponsors, T-Systems, for making the platform possible on Disrupt with Mpumi. Join us next week, where we will be tackling the subject of disruption and looking at another industry and how changes in that industry are impacting all of us, and really where the opportunities lie from an economy point of view. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
This is CliffCentral.com.